Julius, you just asked this excellent question. Ask it again, because we should talk about this and then talk about how this.
Sure. So my question was, has everyone heard of like the 10,000 hour mastery rule? So my question was, I believe that to be true. I also believe the 80-20 to be true. So is it that the 10,000 hour rule is actually not 10,000, but it's more like 3,000 or something like that, that it's much less, that it's actually not the 10,000 hours of training, but it's that there's these 2,000 to 3,000 really valuable hours within that process. And the reason I brought it up was, when we train our athletes, we always say, hey, that if to reach the highest level of the sport, it's going to take you like 10,000 dedicated practice hours. So you can't be frustrated that you're not getting the results that you want, you know, like, because you're only like trained 1,000 hours. But if the 10,000 hours is wrong, and I was just curious what people thought as to maybe it's like, how much can that 10,000 be cut down? You know, could it be that it actually only takes 2,000 hours? Yes, sir.
My answer to that is, if the goal is world-class mastery, then it's not negotiable. It's 10,000 hours. Because
the goal is 80-20, that's different than world-class mastery.
Because if you're just trying to get 80% there, then yeah, 2,000 hours will do you just fine. You know, it's like, do you just want to be the best high school quarterback in the state, or do you want to be Hall of Fame Peyton Manning?
I would think that it also depends on the type of thing that you're trying to do.
There's a lot of truth to that, because, you know, how much better is Peyton Manning than, I don't know, football, but a lesser quarterback?
But what if the thing is not, we're not looking for Hall of Fame.
You know,
we just want to get him to play.
I understand, yeah. But I get what Brian's saying, but I think your question is very interesting, because of the 10,000 hours you've spent, what the Pareto principle dictates is that of that time, 8,000 of them wasn't really worth very much, compared to 2,000 of them that were worth almost everything.
Right.
So the question is, how do you, you know, your real question was, can I shorten it? And that's the, you know, how do you identify it ahead of time, isn't it? I mean, I'm going on this journey to learn how. Is there a way that I can conceivably identify how to focus my energies more efficiently?
I don't think you're from the artist.
The guy that made that phrase popular. What was it? What was the book you wrote?
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes. He just wrote a beautiful article in the Atlantic Monthly addressing exactly that issue. Why some people achieve it at 3,000 hours, and why some take 10,000 hours.
What did he say?
And he says that basically a lot of what he said is being misinterpreted. All right? And that some things like athletic skills, the time varies entirely based on your natural abilities.
Right.
You know, I could have spent 30,000 hours and I'd never been a high school quarterback. You know? So, it's a very interesting article. And it was in response to the guy that did the original study, saying that Malcolm had misinterpreted his study. So it's answering all those questions.
I don't think that the 10,000 hour rule is more like, you know, you realize that it's 10,000 hours to be able to compete with other people who are on like a professional or how
right, that's how I view it. Not right. Hall of Fame
right.
guy.
Just but it's one of those things where you, in the pursuit of mastery, you also realize that one can never truly attain like complete like everyone at every way in some guy's hands. But a lot of it is natural ability. But it seems to be that you can almost like mark where in your progression as a an artist or like a fighter or whatever by the plateaus, you know, like so as you reach the end of the plateau, that's one of those, you know, valuable, that's one of the 2,000 hours that's valuable, you know, but like that 2,000 hours wouldn't be worth anything without the previous plateau, which, yes, you're, and you know, maybe you're improving in these extremely small increments, but it's all about, like, when you get to the end of that plateau, when you, like, make the big leap, and you're like, whoa, like, where did this come from? It wouldn't, I don't think it would be worth as much without the work that went before that, you know, so.
And I also think there are levels to it. You know, there's a certain level of mastery that comes after 1,000 hours and 2,000 hours and 5,000 hours. And it is a level of mastery, but it is not complete mastery. Like, I've been saying to him for the last year and a half that I've been, like, really heavily back into doing improv. It's totally a muscle that you have to work in. It's just like anything else. Like, you have to have the reps. You have to have the experience. And, you know, I had done it for a year or two, you know, several years ago, and I got back into it really heavily a year and a half ago. And I am just now starting to be able to be confident that when I'm on stage, I'm most of the time going to have a pretty good show. And I usually, you know, there's a lot more hits than misses. But I have said to him since a year and a half ago, like, my goal is to be really, really great at this in 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, my goal is to be a master of this in 10 years. But it's a certain level of mastery. Like, I'm just, you know, we, like, just booked a regular show, and, like, you know, we're achieving these levels of success with my team. But it's only the beginning of the mastery. But it is better than we were at a year and a half ago.
I don't think there truly are any shortcuts, because without that, you know, you'd have all form but no substance. You know, part of it, like, there's, like, so much in any kind of pursuit of that, I think there's, like, so much passive stuff that happens. Like, just sit, like, with music, you sit around, you listen to music, you appreciate it, you find what you like, and then you can apply that to your art form. So there's so much in the outside things that are kind of contributing to whatever your development is, and, you know, towards whatever end, professional.
I got a couple thoughts about this. Okay, so there's a book, I forget exactly what it's called, something about mastery, and it's one of these kind of Zen-like books, and it talks about how it's got like four categories. There's dabblers, and there's...
Well, yeah, that one's just mastery. Yeah.
Mastery? Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you remember what the four things are?
There's... I know, we can look it up. Yeah, but there's, like, dabblers who just, like, try a little bit and move on to the next thing. Yeah, we'll find out.
So you can go look that up. So, yeah, Stu, I'll talk to you about this. The thing I took away from the book was, it says the real masters are the people, they climb and climb and climb, then they hit a plateau, and they can't seem to get better, they can't seem to break through, they're just... feel like they're treading water, and then suddenly, you know, there's an improvement, and then you get more plateau. And this is how most things actually go. I mean, it just is. Okay? In biology, evolution, they call this punctuated equilibrium. You know, Malcolm Gladwell calls it tipping point. And usually, it's like... it's either principle of the slight edge, where you get a little better, and then all of a sudden you're a little better than some other person or some other level, and then you go from bronze to silver, you go from silver to gold, and, you know, when you go from silver to gold, that's like a huge quantum leap, even though you're only 0.2 of a second faster, right? Or it's the massive reinvention, right, which is like, oh, you know, we went from invertebrates to vertebrates, and it appears to have only taken an instant of time in evolutionary history, but, like, the right genes all, you know, got lined up, and boom, we got vertebrates, and boom, they proliferate all over the place. Okay? And what the book talks about is... the real masters are people that can actually enjoy this instead of resenting it.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, okay, I'm playing my drums, I'm playing my gigs, I'm playing my drums, I'm playing my gigs. I'm driving around Southern California, playing my drum. You know, I actually like this, and I'm just glad I'm getting paid something for it instead of doing it for free. You know, and I can't wait until, like, I have a breakthrough or my technique gets way better. And it's like you're waiting for the right teacher or the right situation or the right band or, right? There's always these things that you hit up against. Okay. Now, where, okay, I think most people, they think they've got 10,000 hours, but they actually got 2,000 hours five times. And they're actually not pushing the envelope, right? And we can all have something we're pretty good at, not push the envelope. Like, I've always had this idea, for example, for a long time, I've had this idea, someday I'm going to go to a fiction writing workshop. It's going to be like a retreat, and it's going to be run by Barbara Kingsolve or something. In my opinion, fiction writers are way better than us nonfiction writers. It's way more demanding. And everybody's like, Barry, you're such a great writer. Barry, you're such a great writer. Man, I'm going to go to this fiction thing, and I'm going to get my teeth handed to me. You know, with a boxing glove, you know, like, wow, this is terrible, you know, and hopefully by the end of the week, I'm like, okay, right? But I have not put myself in that crucible. I've, in some sense, been coasting along for the last 5 years, right? So, well, I think a lot of it is, do they keep, like, pushing to the next level and, like, well, you know, I'm not just going to be content with jiu-jitsu. I'm also going to, like, do Hapkido and, you know, or whatever it might be, right? And you know, most people are not, like, just pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And so I think there's... So, you know, once in a while you have somebody, they'll just push every single boundary, and they will do in 2,000 hours what most people do in 10. But I think there's so many ways that this can be approached. I'm not sure there's a simple answer.
Right. So I guess the first thing is in regards to what Ryan was saying, that there's, you know, I'm not talking about Peyton Manning, like Hall of Fame. We're just saying that one mastery, like pro, like a true professional, has a really good high level understanding of his art.
Right.
So with having the desire and, you know, to push, then how would we add in the effective coaching? Because a really, like, if we were going to say, like, AdWords, like you always say, like, Google AdWords display, it's almost like an art, right? But couldn't somebody learn the art a lot faster? Like, let's say this, like, he's just learning every day, he's working with you, working with guys who've been doing display ads for such a long time. Wouldn't that speed that thing up?
Of course, it would. And something I have observed is that, like, 10,000 hour and plus masters, once every 20 years or maybe less, they discover something new that redefines everything they ever knew. Okay, so my favorite example of that is there's a story on my website called When the Guru Smacks You Like a Head, Take It Like a Man. It's a story of Neil Peart, the drummer of Rush. Everybody's like, oh, he's a god. You know? And when he was probably in his mid-40s, he went and put himself under a jazz master. So a rock drummer says, okay, I'm going to go learn jazz. And so they sit down and they do some stuff. And he's like, well, you got two problems. You're wearing the wrong kind of shoes and you're holding your sticks wrong.
But this is from the drummer from Journey.
Well,
Steve
studied under Freddie Gruber. And then Neil saw Steve and he's like, wow, you just made a breakthrough. What did you do? Well, I went to study Freddie. So he goes to Freddie. And it's like, okay, so then they make the next album, and instead of doing traditional grip, he's doing match grip, and like he's playing all his songs differently. He's thinking differently about motion and circle and rhythm, you know, and the point in the circle at which you click. And Freddie's like, dude, you know, you've been sitting here just pounding. Dude, it's all about circular motion. Right? You can't wear those tennis shoes. You wear dance shoes because then you can slide around on the pedals and you have so much more mobility. Okay? And the point of the story, it's like, he could have gone, no, dude, I'm the, like, worst badass drummer in the history of rock and roll. Right? I'm not, you know, I'm too cool for school. I'm David Lee Roth. I got bottomless pants. You know, he could have been like that. Right? But instead, he's like, okay, I'm going to learn this. Well, you know, he's got jazz albums where he does fabulous work, and a rock drummer could never do that. And it infused his music. So now if you go to a Rush concert, if you pay attention to what he's doing, and a lot of drummers go, and a lot of them do, like there's some songs he'll play one way, and other songs he'll play another way. And he'll do drum solos where it starts out rock and roll and ends with jazz. And he's like done all these different things. So he has this whole toolkit, right? And so now all of a sudden, like if he gave you drum lessons 25 years ago, he would have said, well, the first thing you need to know is this. And then all of a sudden, he like got to this new level of mastery, and he's like, no, the first thing you need to know is this, and that shortcuts 6,000 hours.
Right.
Right? And you could tell me the exact same story of all kinds of martial arts moves, and it would be almost the same story.
Right?
Right?
Yes.
You know, so like Jack comes up with the tactical triangle. I'm like, ooh, this just redefined everything. I discover 80-20. Oh, this just redefined. I mean, I was already a pretty good marketer when that came along. And there was all this kind of stuff, but it was like, oh, now I get this framework. It just simplifies everything. Like there's 174 things that I can just stick on that curve, and that's why you do it. Right? So now I start by teaching that. And then it makes, so if I teach them 80-20 and the triangle, I just cut 2 years off of your 5-year marketing learning curve. And that's maybe, so like, there's one approach that you get from somebody who's pretty good, and then there's this whole other approach that you get somebody who's like fantastically good, and usually the super duper turbo master has a simpler approach than the medium guy. Yes?
It's the dabbler, the obsessive, and the hacker.
And the master.
And the master, yeah.
So the dabbler, like, I'll try this, and then they get bored, right?
I'll try this. There's jack of all trades, but master of none.
Yeah.
The obsessive is, like, the person who, I think it's the person who, like, really, really does it for, like, 1,000 hours, and then they get frustrated and give up, I think.
Okay.
And then the hacker is someone who just like I think the hacker is the person who tries to cheat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, like everything's a cheat, right?
Yeah.
Everything's a shortcut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they never really achieve the mastery.
Hmm. That's good.
And then, yeah. Okay. I was gonna say, and then one of the chapters is called "Loving the Plateau." Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly in the middle of the plateau, you're probably, I wrote muscle memory, right? Muscle memory in music is the equivalent of being able to drive somewhere and not even remember anything you did with the steering wheel or the brake or anything. Your body just goes on autopilot, right? And in music, it's like, oh yeah, I can do those frets, or I can play those triplets or whatever it might be, and I don't even have to think about it. And it doesn't sound good until you can stop thinking about it,
right?
I think you had a great point too, though, about the there's also the type of person who may have had the 10,000 hours, but they just basically had the same 2,000 hours a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge, because those are the kind of people who, like, you know, they focus on all the wrong things, basically. They tread right. The same path, or they tread the same, like, area, like, walking in circles. You know, they get to a point where it's, like, frustrating, and when the chip they encounter a new challenge, they're basically like, oh, well, it's easier to just do this, so I'll keep doing this. And
yeah.
Go back and forth. And so basically they create this muscle memory, they ingrain bad technique or
yes.
Bad habits. You know, that's how those bad habits are formed. A lot of people are like, And if you see people who like have been, you know, for, with music, you know, they've been doing it for 20 years. It's like, why are you playing good? Because you play all the time. And you know, this happens. This only happens. And
yes.
Sometimes it's the, those people who like it. They're not fact finders, or they're not like looking into the next thing, trying to do something. Or maybe they just lazy, or they haven't learned to love the plateau.
Perhaps, but it's also about paying attention. Like,
right.
For 3 months that you park a car, you are definitely paying attention. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the next 30 years, you are not paying attention at all. Right. So you are not learning, which basically is 3 months of life. Like, until you keep pushing the envelope, you will still be in the MBK in 10 years and you'll still be doing the marketing thing. And, I'm sorry, but I mean, that whole thing, paying attention, pushing the envelope, experimenting, that will expand.
Get the fact
you are actually learning instead of just
purposely evolving rather than just like, maybe it'll happen if I just keep doing the wrong
thing. We figured this out a couple years ago.
Six patents and you can't make a
person. We figured this out a couple years ago when he was grilling us and Brian left his job, and the whole attitude within him was like, we're 10 years younger than him. It was like, you can't possibly be successful because you just aren't good enough. Mm-hmm. And
if I can't,
discuss the Venn diagram himself.
Send him to Mark.
So, like to send him some other ones too. But really, I mean, I've thought about this a lot, just with him constantly being our presence lately, is right. What separates, you know, why are we successful and he's not? He's obviously very smart, but what it is that we're constantly paying, and specifically paying to learn new things, to sharpen the saw. Versus someone who might think they're sharpening the saw by getting free information and going to all these local free, you know, seminars at the library or whatever free stuff they get online. And well, maybe they are thinking, maybe they are doing the fact finding, but maybe they're just finding different variations of the same thing. Or
my drum teacher a few years ago said, it takes about 6 months before a new technique I learned is going to sound good in a live show. That's how long it takes for it to sink into my muscle memory and actually sound good. Well, of course, he can decide whether he's learning one technique every 3 months or one every week. And when I went to the drum camp, a guy made this really great point. He said, if you're going to practice your 30 minutes a day, do not just sit down and start playing stuff. He goes, make a plan. I'm going to learn these patterns this week. I'm going to study this book next week. And then after that, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to keep adding stuff and adding stuff, adding stuff to my repertoire. Right? That's a really big thing. Right? Just like I said about the writing. Like, okay, I haven't undertaken fiction writing classes yet. But I know that would be the next, you know, roller coaster, chain, climbing up the hill thing for me if I want to become a better writer, you know.
And so before Roundtable in Orlando, maybe?
I have to decide if that's actually the important thing for me to be working on right now, right? And I don't know that it is. Maybe I should be practicing drums instead and get that kind of position. You know, yesterday, right?
That's not a war or situation.
Well, to an extent.
I'm just kidding.
Well, that could be. I keep asking my writer friends, do they have that? And usually they're like, oh, I'm sure it must exist somewhere, but I haven't heard about it. So.
Oh, right. You even did a funny thing.
That's an induction.
Oh, well, right. And also, like, well, does it have to be a superstar? Because there are a lot of below. But let's put it this way. I know the people that would get me to where I need to go. I do. I mean, I know New York Times best-selling fiction authors, you know. So anyway, great, great question. Just last thing. Gavin Harrison, he's a tremendous drummer. He tells this great story of going and playing in a session, and the producer says, so they cut a recording, and the producer says, so how well did you play? And he goes,
I don't know, I'm going to have to listen to it first. And he goes, well, weren't you listening when you were playing? He's like, well, I wasn't. But now he does. Now he can play and listen at the same time. He's like, that's one of his biggest skills now. When he was teaching our class in the drum class, he said, your brain has a CPU meter, you know, just like your computer, you know, and there's 0%, there's 100%, and there's 60%. And he goes, you know, when you get in front of a live audience and you got all this pressure, you know, that CPU meter goes up because you're all stressed out. He goes, if you don't know your craft really well to where you can play any song you want at 20 or 25% CPU, then when you get in front of a live audience, your CPU is already going to be at 85% just playing, and you only have 15% to listen with. He said that margin is the listening. I'm like, oh, that was worth a trip to drum camp right there, right? And so, like, in any art, whether it's wrestling or cage fighting or lead generation or marketing or writing or PR, while you do what you do, can you have objectivity about it and judge it while you're doing it? Or, like, if you're speaking in front of an audience, do you have enough CPU left over to actually pay attention to the audience's reactions? Or are you just totally in your head delivering a memorized speech, right? So you might think about that. And, you know, that those 10,000 hours make the CPU time go down that you need in order to do your thing.
We noticed that a lot in when we send the guys to compete. Because a lot of them, like, we actually send them, like, Europe, Brazil. Because sometimes a trip alone, by the time they get there, they're just like, they can't. Mm-hmm. And what we noticed is, like, the more that they compete, that their how much they get frazzled kind of goes down, and they get kind of, like, match awareness and even, like, self-awareness. Like, mm-hmm. We noticed that a lot of the times, the first few times, that, especially for the first year, you just go out there and you just do your thing. And then the match over is, oh my God, it felt so fast. It felt so long. They don't have any awareness. And then as you get later, and the people say, like, oh, I got tired. I didn't get tired. And then 2 years, 3 years, they're like, oh, I was getting tired. So I adjusted and I did this and I felt this. So I was able to adjust for that. So that they're able to regulate themselves within the context of the stressor. And then also with, the skill development, we notice that there's that thing in the mind where they say you can only keep track of like 6 or 7 things. Mm-hmm. And we notice that in the beginning you keep track of, oh, my hand has to be here, my elbow has to be here, and then later they just say it's one position, so it's all smushed into one, so then they can get like 6 other things that they're keeping track of. So
what's the term you use?
Eyesight.
Okay, you're talking about match awareness, but it's why a veteran quarterback who's played in 3 Super Bowls already has this unimaginable advantage over the, you know, the first-year quarterback who's playing in his first Super Bowl. You know, the veteran quarterback's like been there, done that.
Yeah, that CPU is down.